Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. As always, we're kicking off our week with art, and today we're concentrating on Basel and London. Last month, art lovers flocked to Switzerland for Art Basel, but since the fair's wrapped up, there's still a wealth of excellent shows to see in the city. Jane Morris, who's editor at the Art newspaper, is my guest today, and she has the lowdown on the must-see exhibitions and why it's almost better to head over there now than it was during the fair. Plus, we'll discuss the rise of immersive hit shows here in London. From the Barbican to the Haywood, everyone seems to have an interactive summer smash hit, and we'll be sorting the great from the gimmicky. That's all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Art Basel took place in June, but many of the world-class exhibitions are still on show. Jane Morris, thanks for coming in to chat through it with me. Now, as we were discussing just before we came on air, Basel's not the most exciting of places.
It's a light industrial city with an awful lot of people working in pharmaceuticals, biotech, those kind of industries. And I think I can say with fairness that it's not a place that most people treat as a holiday destination.
Except when Art Basel's on. And now it seems even when it's not, because there are some shows that are still on that it's worth making the journey back for.
Well, the city has a population, I think, of only 200,000 people. So it's quite remarkable that there are, at the moment, probably four or five world-class exhibitions on. I think probably the absolute standout one and worth making a trip in on its own is to see the Schaulager, which is a store that only opens some of the time to show exhibitions. And this year it's showing the Emmanuel Hoffman collection, Hoffman as in Hoffman La Roche. Mm-hmm. It's showing 300 works in a two-floor exhibition in the normal exhibition space. But unusually, it's opened the three storage floors above. And in those three storage floors, there are 10 major room-sized exhibitions, single-artist exhibitions. They're very, very rarely seen. Only the very privileged usually get to go to see them by appointment during Basel. I've never seen them. I know two people, I think, that have actually gone and seen them. So it's worth making the trip just to see that alone.
Who are the single artists?
Well, there's quite a range of them, but probably the most famous ones would be Matthew Barney, which has got an installation from the Cremaster cycle, which is part of the Hoffman collection. There is two film installations by Francis Alice. Jane and Louise Wilson, they're showing their film around Greenham Common, which is an extraordinary experience, actually. And again, very rare chance to see these. Paul Chan is showing an installation of his book installations. I mean, there's just several great artists.
And it's not the only great show in town. Let's move on to another one. Now, this is an artist who was originally born in South Africa, Marlene Dumas. She then moved to Amsterdam and now she's exhibiting here in Basel.
This is the third outing of this exhibition. It actually started at the Stedelijk and then moved to the Tate and now is on show in the Beiler, which I think many people consider one of the most beautiful museums in the world. It's quite a small museum built by Renzo Piano. The exhibition has been different in each of its venues. And I think because this one has been installed by Marlene Dumas with Theodora Vischer, the curator now at the Beiler, it has about 20 additional works. But the main thing, I think, is because it's being shown in daylight, which is one of the really unusual features of the Beiler, and because these very delicate watercolour surfaces are usually kept in more subdued lighting, it's really quite remarkable to see how the colours zing out from the canvas. It's a very dark show, I think it would be fair to say. Dumas is quite a dark artist, and I think because of apartheid, and I think she just has an interest in some of the darker sort of aspects of life, this show looks really powerful in the space.
And it's shown in chronological order, isn't it? So it's a great retrospective, really, from the 70s up to the present day.
Yes. I mean, the artist herself said she did have some anxieties about that because she doesn't see herself as one of those artists who works in sort of period themes. Having said that, it does help viewers to understand her work. And although it's not strictly chronological, it does give a really great introduction to her work. A lot of people who obviously, if you've seen the Tate show, then this would really be more for specialists to see a second hang of it, a third hang of it correctly. But if you have not seen her work before, sometimes her work can look quite pretty And she's done some pictures of celebrities and she can be known for that, whereas this really is the core body of her work. And she often says that her favourite work is actually another work that's in Basel, which is the famous Hans Holbein Dead Christ. So to be able to see her take on it and then to actually go, well, you can't go to the Kunstmuseum. You have to go to a special exhibition that the Kunstmuseum has made of its masterpieces. And you can see the Holbein painting there at the same time in the same city.
Now, before we leave Basel, we can't go without a nod to the smelly exhibition that's made from, what is it, potato chips, snail excretions and deep fried flowers.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds awful, doesn't it? This is a show by a Korean-born artist who now works in New York called Annika Yee. The show's at the Kunsthalle Basel. Kunsthalle is generally best known for its bar. So it's really interesting that in the last couple of years, the team, I think, has really upped the quality of its exhibitions. And they've got two on at the moment. One of them is this Annika Yee show. Now, fortunately, it's not quite as smelly as you might imagine. she had a residency at MIT and she experiments with unusual materials to create, well, in some ways, quite classic sculpture. The first sculptures you see are these beautiful glass vitrines with this kind of green gloop at the bottom. And although it does look rather unearthly and you fear it's going to be really quite unpleasant, they're actually rather elegant and beautiful. Mm. And the deep fried flowers, tempura flowers fried in resin, she puts these into these bubbles and creates these kind of marvellous kind of worlds. They're a little bit like those things that you shake, you know, those...
snow globes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But a sort of flowery version. So it's actually much more attractive than it sounds.
Well, all of those shows continue after the end of Art Basel and well worth making the trip for, as my guest says. Now, we're going to continue, Jane, and move to London, where this summer we're presented with a multitude of immersive and interactive shows from the big institutions and galleries. So who's doing this well?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is that we did a survey actually at the Art newspaper of some of the most popular works that have been shown repeatedly around museums. And it became very apparent that the kind of things that are most popular are these big installation type pieces. So the Rain Room or Janet Cardiff and George Burroughs Miller's 40-piece motet, which uses the Thomas Tallis Speminalium it's presented on stands and you stand in the middle and you can hear the singers singing. So it's pretty obvious that this is very sort of attractive to the public. And it's probably therefore not a surprise that this summer we do have a set of these kind of big interactive or immersive pieces showing in London. I think the Thomas Hirshhorn at the South London Gallery is, although it's perhaps not the most successful of all the works he's done like this, he's very rarely seen in London. So for most people, this is going to be a rare chance to see his work, and it is a good example. He's basically filled the South London Gallery with he uses cheap found materials, so packing cases, MDF, destroyed fiberboard, there's bits of old toilets and, you know, aluminium ducting, and, you know, it looks like a bomb has been dropped in the middle of the gallery. He likes to refer to philosophers, but I wouldn't be put off by that too much. Because I think you can understand that this piece is about things being destroyed and whether or not that's a good thing. He's quite an angry, I wouldn't say he's a young, angry young man. He's probably an angry late middle-aged man now. And, you know, he's very interested in ideas of taking apart capitalism and those kind of things, taking apart religion.
Can we look at perhaps an exhibition that didn't impress you quite so much? What do you feel wasn't as top-notch as you'd have liked?
Well, Carsten Holler is really, really popular. So I hate to say this because everywhere that puts up the slides gets queues. But I have to say, I think the show that's on at the Hayward Gallery is pretty silly. It's full of kind of Victorian trickery. So you go in through a very darkened corridor. It is kind of scary, if I'm honest. I mean, I'm scared of heights. I'm not mad on the dark. I didn't think I was claustrophobic, but I began to feel it a bit in this tunnel. But these are quite simple emotions to induce. Mm. And, you know, I think that any of us could create spaces like this and get people to walk through it. I mean, if you put somebody's head in a narrow space, they're going to feel claustrophobic. If you put these upside down glasses on, then they're going to feel disoriented. I think it's a crowd pleaser. And when I went in there, it is true, it's popular with families. I'm sure the children were absolutely loving it. But as I say, I think these are sort of fairly easy tricks to pull, and there's quite a lot of high-flown verbiage written about them.
Mm. So how fine is the line, do you think, between making a good interactive exhibition and something like this, which is just, as you say, really quite gimmicky to bring in the customers?
Well, I think you've got to make people feel things that are complicated, and I think you want to do things that make people have, well, think slightly more complicated thoughts than, oh, I feel scared, you know? Mm. It's quite interesting because Art Angel has gone for a different tack, and they've taken a rather esoteric filmmaker called Ben Rivers. I mean, I think The Guardian described it as slow film, and I think that is a pretty accurate description. He has won prizes in the past for more straightforward documentary films in the... I think they were not considered straightforward by the general documentary world, but in art terms... more narrative films. But these, so what they've done is they've taken these much less narrative films and put them in the BBC Television Centre, the old drama department out at Wood Lane, which is, I think, about to be pulled down and turned into luxury flats and offices and shops and things. And it's a great chance to go and see that space. But it's almost got the opposite problem, which is the space is fantastic. Art Angel is really famous for finding these out-of-the-way places and getting public access to them. So it's worth seeing it for that. Funnily enough, as I say, it's got the opposite problem, that these very slow films in this very dramatic and strange and rather spooky and actually rather scary environment. I mean, it's got staircases that are more scary than some of what Carsten Holler is putting up for us at the Hayward. It's a great chance to see the space, but it rather overwhelms these films, I have to be honest. And because the films are very slow, it's not an environment where you're going to probably want to sit for a very long time, I don't think. Mm. So that's the opposite problem of in trying to do something quite complicated, putting quite complex, rather thought-provoking films into a very dramatic space, I think you end up with a kind of slightly confusing experience. And to be honest, I think most people who've been to see it, and myself included, enjoyed going to see the space more than seeing the films.
Mm. Let's turn to one last piece. And this is on at the Barbican. This is Station to Station. What did you think of this?
Well, I've become strangely obsessed with this. Initially, when I first saw it, I must have been back three times now. When I first saw it, I thought, I love the film by Doug Aitken. Doug Aitken took a train across America for 24 days, 4,000 miles, and the train itself was a sort of sculpture. It was covered in lights and some beautiful photography of it. But what he did was he stopped at different cities, and each city there would be happenings. And it was a mixture of local artists, quite famous people like Beck doing performances, local groups, and then it would move on. And in the Barbican, there's a film of that experience. And then around it are all these activities that are happening. So there's a dance studio, there's a graphic studio, there's a painting studio with different people in residence. Plus, there's all sorts of performances and installations just kind of scattered around the Barbican. Some of them are not very successful at all, I should say. But I think that's sort of the point, because it's supposed to be about, well, I think they rather grandly said it's the nature of creativity. If you've never been to an art school or drama school or anything like that, I think you do actually get a flavour going around of what the process of making things is like, because you can see practitioners at work. You can see that some things fail. You know, some things are really amazing. There's a thing in a laser piece in the curve, which is quite simple but very effective. But then there's other pieces. I think there's something called the model universe, which I, again, a bit like Carsten Holler, thought was pretty silly. But the main thing is this central film. And this film, really, unlike the Ben Rivers films, this film, I would say, is immediately gripping. And there's sort of big sort of mattresses lying around the place. So you can basically chill out there. It does feel very West Coast. Doug Aitken is a West Coast artist. You can just sit there, but there is something very mesmerizing about the images, about the sound, and it's intercut with him interviewing artists about the way they work. So I think it's quite an addictive experience.
And it sounds absolutely extraordinary. So that's Station to Station. It's at the Barbican and it's on until the 26th of July. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Jane Morris, thank you very much indeed. It was great to have you back here in the studio. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. My producer was Holly Fisher, and we'll be back at the same time tomorrow with our weekly music review. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks for listening.